I'll see you, Jude.
Never super. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be happy. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living here and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy.
Let none deceive another,
or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outward and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to false views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
So, just make yourselves comfortable. Choose your meditation subject and just focus your attention on that. As I've said before, when you listen to Dhamma with a peaceful heart, then the Dhamma will enter, regardless of language, regardless of how much consciously you understand of what's being said, because the Dhamma and a cool heart, a cool mind, go hand in hand, like peas in a pod. And that's the way to listen to Dhamma. Now, Dhamma itself is very simple. It's all about one thing: suffering. and the path that leads to the end of suffering. It's not complicated. And the best teacher that we all have certainly isn't me, and it's not really any of the monks that you can listen to. The best teacher you take with you everywhere you go, whether you're standing, walking, sitting or lying down. And that's this body. This body is the best teacher of Dharma that there is. Save for the Buddha, of course, in the sense that without the Buddha, no one would know that this body was a treasure trove of information. Every day, every waking moment, it screams out at you its very nature. And its nature is suffering. It experiences pain. It experiences old age and the diseases that are associated with that. The body breaks up. Aching joints, sore muscles, headaches, toothache. There's a pain for every part of our body. We've got a long list of them. And we've got specialists that are with just as long a list of experts in this and experts in the other. And each one, I'm sure they're well-intentioned, but they fail to realize that the fundamental nature of the body is that it does break up. And the sooner that we can accept that, the sooner that we can realize that and see it for ourselves, the more pain and disease cease to be suffering. They don't go away, but knowledge of the pain and suffering that we endure, understanding it as opposed to just feeling it, breaks the attachment that we're born with. When we're born, we're immediately attached to this body. We see it as me, as mine. So this is what the Lord Buddha called Kandamara. Mara, the great deceiver. Many people will have read the story of the Buddha and read the part about Mara tempting him before he became enlightened. Mara sending his daughters to deceive the Buddha and to make him want to stay worldly. Mara sending his army of demons to stop the Buddha from being enlightened. Mara, who even after 5 or 6 years after the Buddha's enlightenment, tried to get him to commit suicide and die so that the Dhamma would spread less. Mara, sometimes called the evil one. And whether you think of it as a being, or simply obstacles, it doesn't really matter. The fact is that this is, if you like, the dark side of our nature. Kandamara is this body, is this mind and body. And from the moment that we're conceived, Kandamara, the obstruction or the the negative side, if you like, of our corporeal existence displays its nature from the time that we're born, time that we're conceived. We're stuck with this body until the day we die. And it gets punished. Birth itself is suffering. Painful for the mother, painful for the child. Coming out into lights, or it's certainly into an environment which is completely foreign to it. There it was one minute, nice and warm inside mother. Next minute, whoop, out into the big wide world. Pain, suffering. Not knowing what this is all about, not being able to understand the circumstances that it finds itself in. Pain. And Kandamara exists right the way through one's life. Like I said, we get pains in all sorts. We even get mental pain. We have mental illnesses, illnesses that affect feeling, perception, thoughts, consciousness. Even these are not exempt from suffering. That's the nature of existence. And so there's another kind of mara, another kind of obstacle. We have to overcome the suffering that is inherent within beings that are born into this world. When I say this world, when I mean beings, I mean not just human beings, animals, devas, in different realms. All experience suffering to some degree or another. Then there's Kilesa Mara. I've spoken about Kilesa Mara before. Certainly Kilesa. And that term means defilements. It means things which pollute the mind. We've heard of them. Greed, hatred, delusion. But in this particular sense, the Lord Buddha, when he talked about Kilesa Mara, was really very much referring to the last of those. Delusion. Yes, we can get hung up on being greedy, or we can be enraged and infuriated. But the real reason why we get into those unwholesome mental states is because our own hearts and minds deceive us. And we're too stupid, too ignorant to actually understand that. Then that's what trying to practice meditation, it's one of the objectives, is to try and understand what this delusion is. Because we see things with the eye, we think, oh, that's pretty, that's nice, oh, something that we might fall in love with, or we see something that we don't like and we think, that's horrible. We see something like our own body and we think it to be ourselves. We think it to be permanent. We see things which are impermanent and believe them to be permanent. We see things which are the cause of suffering, but we think that they're great. We hear sounds which we think are really pleasing, beautiful music. And we fail to see the attachment that brings, how we're looking to external stimuli for our source of happiness. It's an illusion. All those things are impermanent, and what is impermanent is suffering. Nothing that is impermanent can lead to happiness, because when it dies, any happiness that you had associated with it dies with it. When it breaks up, any happiness associated with it breaks up with it. You buy a nice new car and dent it on the way out the showroom. How happy are you with that? This car that you thought was wonderful 5 minutes ago now suddenly is a cause of distress. You think having a nice bank account's great until you have to spend money and more money on bills. And so you think, well, maybe I should then try and get more money. So then you're locked into struggle and strife, trying to earn more and more to cater for your ever-increasing want for the trappings of modern society. You're not content just to have a basic house, just to have enough food to eat, place to rest, few medicines to look after yourself when you're not well. No. And we're all the same. It's not that anyone's particularly worse than anybody else. Because you see the things, you strive for the things which this world, the conventional world, tells you will bring you happiness. Have a nice relationship. That's great. If you can have a nice relationship, but how many of them end in tears? Have a family. If you place all your emphasis on your family, then what happens when your child gets sick? What happens when your child dies in a motor accident? How happy are you then? It's very difficult for lay people to try and understand what delusion is when they're locked into a world which is the conventional world, says, you know, you have to have a job, you have to have money, you have to have a family. So the task in front of us as lay people is quite daunting. But unless we make some effort, it's not only going to be daunting for this life, it's going to be daunting for the next life and the next life and many lives after. So we can practice meditation and we can learn to calm our minds and make them still. But eventually we have to use that stillness to come and understand the nature of the delusion that our mind is embedded in. Because only doing that will we break free from suffering. And what did I say at the beginning? Dhamma is about one thing, suffering and the path that leads to its end. And understanding delusion is the key to the path which leads to the end of suffering. So in the short term, we can practice meditation, we can take our meditation subject and still our minds, and that helps to alleviate some of the suffering and helps to bring some things into focus. Because only when the mind is still can we see really the reflection of the world that shines in our minds. When we're rushing around here, there, thinking of this, thinking of that, thinking of the other, we're well and truly in Kilesa Mara's grip. That's exactly what Mara wants. So the first step in understanding the world is to make one's own mind calm. And that means we have to tackle some of the obstacles that I've mentioned. Some of the things which fire up the mind. Greed, hatred, envy, lust. All these things are negative emotions. They're negative states of mind. And part of the path is to limit or eliminate, if you can, all of these negative traits. So, first step really in eliminating these states and trying to understand the nature of the world that we live in is, as I said, to practice your meditation subject, pick your meditation subject, and use mindfulness to keep your mind associated with that particular meditation subject. Mindfulness is the key. Because without mindfulness, we don't know what we're doing. Without mindfulness, kilesa mara take over. And our mind drifts off thinking of this, thinking of that, thinking of the other. And there's no foundation on which knowledge can grow. But when we have mindfulness and we see that the mind is distracted, then we can bring the mind back to its meditation subject. Whether we're sitting, standing, walking or lying down, we can have mindfulness. And that's what I said at the beginning. That's why this body is a great teacher. Because we take it everywhere. So when we're standing, sitting, walking, lying down, we've got something to focus our attention on. How many people sit at the doctor's or sit in the queue waiting for something to happen? I don't know. Whatever you're doing. And thinking, oh, I'm bored. Well, we shouldn't be bored. We should be taking the opportunity to be taught by this great teacher that we have, which is our mind-body. When we're sitting here and we're in pain, that's Kandamara, telling you its very nature. That's what this body is. What an opportunity. An opportunity to learn. And that's where mindfulness comes in. And the more mindful that you are, and the more the mindfulness looks after the mind, then the more concentrated you can become. And then eventually you can use the power of that concentration to focus sharply on objects that you see through the eye, that you hear through the ear, through all the senses. You can see how you react to that stimuli. And how you react to that stimuli will be what causes karma, which will determine where you are born in the future. So if we want to have good control over where we're born into the future, it's really important for us to have mindfulness and for us to start to examine the nature of these sensory images that impinge on our senses. Whether it's sight, sound, taste, smell, touch, or even our thoughts. It's really important for us to be mindful of them. We can't afford to let kilesa mara rule the roost, because we know that kilesa mara, if left unchecked without mindfulness, will develop lust, greed, hatred, delusion, all of the unwholesome things, because that's its nature. And that's built up over aeons of lifetime after lifetime after lifetime. That's why it's so difficult to practice and to come to grips with all these things, because we've been conditioned not just from birth in this lifetime, but over many, many lifetimes, that all these things are normal. All these things are fine, but they're not fine. Greed, hatred, lust, these are unwholesome states. If we want to further our understanding of Dhamma, we have to develop the opposite. We have to develop loving kindness, compassion, mindfulness, wisdom, contentedness, tranquility. These are wholesome states of mind, and these are the ones that we should be developing. But we can't develop them if we don't have mindfulness. Mindfulness is what watches over the citta, the heart. When we develop mindfulness through the practicing meditation, whether that's through coming to formal meditation sessions or whether it's at home, watching what you're doing, being aware as you go about your daily business, doesn't matter. Mindfulness is mindfulness. That can lead then to concentration, tranquility. When the mind becomes really still, then it withdraws from the senses. So you don't hear things, you don't see things. When the mind is perfectly still, it's at a singularity. It's beyond the pairs of opposites which define the conventional world. It's beyond good and bad. It's beyond hot and cold. It's still. For that moment, for that time, it's like time stands still. And when you can practice like that, then you're starting to get somewhere with your meditation. When I was a teenager, I used to practice some martial arts, and my teachers said, not just to me but to the group, what did we aspire to? And of course everyone wanted to be a black belt, because if everyone thought, you know, if you're a black belt you really know something, you can defend yourself and practice and be really good at something. And that was the general answer. And his reply was, when you get to black belt, that's when you start to learn. That's when you start to make progress. So everyone who was there, all the students thought that they'd made it when they got to be a black belt. But the black belt's answer was, no, that's when you're just starting to learn, when you can start to make things happen in the sport. And meditation's a little bit like that. We come through all these hardships, we go through all these stages of practicing, trying to overcome the obstacles to our concentration. But all that's the very start. All that's what's leading up to us, getting to our minds where our mind is still. In this singularity, where the object and the mind are the one and the same. Then we've reached a stage where we can say it's the same as the black belt in martial arts. Because then when you get to that stage, then you can make your mind useful. Because then your mindfulness is good and your concentration is good. So then you can really start, after you've finished in that state, to turn your attention to the things which are binding you to this world, binding you to future existence. You can turn your attention to the kilesa, you can turn your attention to sensory stimuli and try to then watch them and see what really happens as you respond to those stimuli. Then you can start to make judgments as to what's an appropriate response and what's not. And as you watch these things take place, wisdom arises. And it's this wisdom that we apply in order for us to follow the path that leads to the end of suffering. So first of all, we have to realize that there is a need for wisdom. There is a need to understand the world that we live in. And indeed, our inner world, a need to understand how this body works, a need to understand how this mind works. What is its nature? The nature of the body and mind, suffering, impermanent, and therefore no self can be found, no permanent entity within any of this can be seen. And with wisdom, that becomes clearer and clearer and clearer. And as that becomes clearer, attachment to external objects starts to wane. And that's where we start to make real gains and real practice. And yes, it's very hard for lay people to get to that sort of level of practice. But unless you understand what you're aiming for, unless you have some goal, then you'll never achieve it. So what I'm saying is, certainly keep up your meditation and understand that it's a journey. Don't be discouraged, because that discouragement is simply part of the illusion or delusion. Don't be unhappy. Don't be impatient. These things are just kilesamara, fighting back. The fact that you're doing some meditation is something which is good and something which kilesamara don't like. So simply put in the practice. Expect no results. Only do the practice. Whatever your meditation subject is, focus your attention there. Keep up with your mindfulness, and then results will come. And when they come, then, well, it depends what the results are, but some of the results can be quite amazing. But that's for you to discover. But only through practice will you make that discovery. And then you realize that the Dharma is in fact worth far more than any worldly possession. That's enough for me. Here one. We'll practice meditation now. So, just feel yourself comfortable in your seat. Feel your bottom sitting on the chair or on the floor or a cushion or whatever. Just feel that it's meant to be there. But you're just in the moment. Your arms are just relaxed. Your legs are relaxed. Even if you feel a bit of pain, that's the part of the delusion. It's something to note. Let mindfulness be aware of it. But then bring your mindfulness back to the meditation subject. Whatever the mindfulness, wherever you focus your mindfulness, just become one with the meditation subject. Just follow it. Let all your thoughts go. That's just delusion. Just sink into your meditation subject. Just as if you're sinking into your chair or your cushion. Just let the mind rest on that subject, whether it's the breath, whether it's loathsomeness of the body, death, or just a plain mantra like Buddho, Buddho. Just let the mind relax and sink into that. Nothing else matters. Nothing else is important. Just place your attention on that meditation subject. Let all other thoughts, all worries disappear. Don't be impatient. Just relax into your meditation subject so that you and the meditation subject become one. Now, as we start to wind down, just watch your breath. As you breathe in, feel energy coming into your lungs, through your nose, through your nostrils, down into your lungs. Feel bright, light energy. And as you breathe out, feel that energy being pushed out through your limbs, through your chest, through your arms, through your head, out through your legs. Just feel it. Don't follow it. Just feel. As you breathe in, feel that energy. Breathe in and breathe out. Feel that energy forced through your entire body, out through your hands, your feet, your head. Feel power, that energy coming in and going through your entire body as you breathe out. Breathe in that energy. Feel it flowing out, relaxing every muscle in your body, overcoming all the pains and aches. Feel it pushing away any blockages. Just feeling warm, tranquil. Now, let's bring our meditation to an end. Don't rush. Just feel yourself coming round. Normal time. Smell Harry. Just feel comfortable and happy. Over to the chanting maestro.
Now let us chant the verses of sharing and aspiration.
Through the goodness that arises from my practice, may my spiritual teachers and guides of great virtue, my mother, my father, and my relatives, the sun and the moon, and all virtuous leaders of the world, may the highest gods and evil forces, celestial beings, guardian spirits of the earth, and the Lord of death, may those who are friendly, indifferent or hostile, may all beings receive the blessings of my life. May they soon attain the threefold bliss and realize the deathless. Through the goodness that arises from my practice and through this act of sharing, may all desires and attachments quickly cease, and all harmful states of mind, until I realize Nirvana. In every kind of birth, may I have an upright mind, with mindfulness and wisdom, austerity and vigor. May the forces of delusion not take hold, nor weaken my resolve. The Buddha is my excellent refuge. Unsurpassed is the protection of the Dharma. The solitary Buddha is my reward. The Sangha is my supreme support. Through the supreme power of all of these, may darkness and delusion be dispelled. Santu.